Hello, good evening, everyone. It's
Hello.
hello, Carolyn here. So welcome, and as you can see, it's facing uncertain times, class three, and we're doing practices for calm, kindness, and compassion. The attitudes for our uncertain times that we're looking at are the four immeasurable attitudes, which is a practice that I've been doing for now 13 years and presenting for 13 years. And it's one that my life can certainly bear witness to the benefit and transformation qualities of these attitudes. One of the key people in our tradition who's talked about these four attitudes is Kathleen McDonald, there, who wrote this book over 10 years ago. And in fact, there haven't been a lot of full books written about the four immeasurable attitudes, and she is one of the advocates for it. And as she says, they're powerful and proven methods to transform our mind, and they are positive mental factors that we use with our mind to use as a window to ourselves and as a window to the world. And with that, they're ingredients for our well-being, peace of mind, positive communication, and beneficial relationships. Now, you can see with those points there, mind and mental factors, that first of all, we'll look at the attitudes as mental factors. The first one is loving kindness. And with loving kindness, this is how we direct our mind with wanting ourselves and everyone else, all beings, to have happiness and its causes of true, genuine happiness. The second one is compassion, and that's the one we'll be doing tonight. And compassion is wishing for ourselves and others to have freedom from suffering and all the causes of suffering. The third one is the joy, never to be separated from the happiness without any suffering. And as we'll do joy next week, and you'll get to understand that when it says never be separated from happiness with no suffering, is that we transform our mind with the true sources of happiness such that suffering doesn't arise in our mind at all, which is Buddhahood. But along the way, we can reduce the causes for suffering in our mind. So that's a very joyful attitude to have. And equanimity, which is freedom from bias, attachment, and anger, holding some close and others distant. And so, with the idea of mind and mental factors, it is important, and while it's a complex topic, it is important to have some understanding of mind. And mind is a consciousness whose function is to know, to experience, to be aware. And it's one of the analogies is like the sky that is clear, and the clouds that go across the sky don't sort of eat into or change the quality of the sky. The sky always remains there and is aware. And mental factors direct the mind with the mental factor of intention. Intention is itself a mental factor, and it is said it's the most important one for its capacity to direct our mind in some way, because our mind, as we all know, is looking for something to, direct its attention to contact with attention, etc. And so this is how we can develop some control over how we direct our mind. And with another factor, feeling, that we direct our mind, and the impact can be positive or negative or neutral. But if we just stay at that level, then we can control more what's going on. It's when we take the positive or negative or neutral feelings to the afflictions of anger, attachment, hatred, jealousy, that heavier, denser level that we start to get real suffering, but it's also the way to get real happiness. And while the mind is not physical, the mind and mental factors that are carried through the general consciousness do interact with the body and so with the brain. So there's a relationship between mind, mental factors and the body, which is, we'll see in a little while, what neuroscience has done. So it has taken the Buddhist view about mind and mental factors, and which is mind and mental factors is kind of like first person reporting of what you're experiencing. But neuroscience, with all its wonderful methods, is able to actually do third person reporting and get all sorts of maps of the brain and what happens in that. And I'll have a diagram of that later in the class. But just to get a little bit of an idea of, again, of mind, and this is a quote which I'm very fond of. This mind, which has many faults, has one great quality. What is that? Whichever way you train it, that's what it becomes. And if you really think hard about that quote, so how you train your mind is what it becomes. And the question for all of us is, how are we training our mind? Are they with negative mental factors or positive mental factors? And obviously, this course is all about training your mind with the positive mental factors of loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And so we're going to just do a very short meditation just to get a little bit of an idea of the mind. So imagine everyone's in a chair, so sitting up. And the important thing is to have a straight back. And the thing about the straight back, and you've probably heard the, you know, from yoga and that chakra channels. And so you're trying to get the energy channels nice and straight through the back there. And it's sort of like this lovely golden string is holding, going through your crown, holding you up. And let your hands just rest gently in your lap or on your thighs. Maybe roll your shoulders forward and back so you're relaxing the shoulders, and then sort of drop them down. And soften your gaze, or lightly, only lightly close your eyes. You don't want to invite drowsiness in. And then take a few deep breaths. And let your breathing be in a natural, relaxed rhythm. And then gently bring your awareness to the sensations of your breath as it moves in and out of your body. You might feel the air at the tip of your nose, or you might feel it more in the rise and fall at your chest or down at your abdomen. Rest your awareness on the breath and how it's going through your body. And let that awareness on the breath anchor you to this present moment. Having awareness of your breath, awareness of the beginning and the ending of each breath. And as you focus on the breath, maybe you have noticed that your mind wants to flick to something else. It wanders to other thoughts or memories. Acknowledge your mind has wandered without judgment. This noticing is a moment of awareness. And we are building awareness of our mind. So simply observe that your mind wandered. Don't get lost in that wandering. Come back. Gently guide your attention back to the sensation of the breath, to the awareness of the breath in your body as you breathe in and out. The task is to keep awareness of your mind on the breath. And if again your mind has wandered a bit, at least notice that you have an awareness of where the mind is. Awareness that the mind wandered from the breath. Be pleased that you noticed, but don't get caught up. And remember to put the awareness back onto the breath. Direct your mind with awareness to be on the breath. And with this short meditation, it's about having awareness of your mind, awareness that the mind you are directing to focus on the breath doesn't follow that direction, that it wanders off. So we are training the mind to be aware and to be able to direct that awareness to the object that you want it to be aware of. This meditation, it was the breath. So for just a minute more, keep awareness on the breath. As we conclude the practice, have awareness of your breath and then allow yourself to expand that awareness to cover your whole mind. Then expand that awareness more to be in whatever space you are in, and then take a few deep breaths. Open your eyes and return your awareness to all your surroundings. We'll dedicate with the intention to bring mindful awareness to your practice of the four immeasurable attitudes. Did you sort of get the idea of that in what we're doing here was to be aware of the awareness, really, almost so that your mind is knows it's supposed to be on the object of the breath. But then it wanders around, wanders off. And being aware of it wandering off to other things is at least is a good thing. Yes, so that's exactly right. So it's, as Chad said here, practice bringing it back. And that's so if you're in kind of more difficult situations, more challenging, it's about trying to build an awareness of where your mind is and what's in the mind to be able to deal in a more positive or effective way with the situation that might be challenging. So starting with basic awareness of where is my mind is what we're trying to at least consider there. So with the course so far, we've had three, this is the third class. And what I have tried to, as I've said earlier, what I've tried to indicate is just the wonderful relationship now between the Buddhist view and neuroscience. And this is a bit of a grainy picture, but it's pretty amazing. You can see this picture was taken in 1992 after the Dalai Lama had founded in 1997 the Mind and Life Institute. And that was for the purpose of getting neuroscience and the Buddhist view together. And you can see His Holiness in the middle there. And look at the basic equipment that they have that they're looking at to start to map in the brain some of the impact of the experiments they're doing using meditators and using people meditating on kindness, compassion. And what they have shown from early on that meditation forges new neural pathways that make it easier to generate compassion and positive emotions like compassion. So concentration and positive emotions like compassion. So that is the good news. So that's why proven methods like they have, thank you, neuroscience, proved that that is one of the results that you can achieve. Now, with our first class, we looked at the attitude of equanimity. And what we did there was we examined the, as I said earlier, about having feelings, positive, negative, or neutral. And so, what happens if we extend those feelings out? We get the way we label people. And so, our feelings then come out as labels of like, dislike, don't care. And they get into the afflictions of, attachment, the clinging attachment, and it's about ego. It's about dislike, aversion, or anger or hatred. And that is always suffering in the mind. And then don't care, it's about ignorance, about it's not knowing. And so we looked at trying to understand equanimity as a mental attitude in your mind to developing genuine loving kindness for like, patience and compassion for dislike, instead, you know, as a new mental state to aversion, and instead of ignorance, having some knowledge of interconnection and interdependence between everyone. So if you just look at, you know, anything you eat, the number of people that you have no idea who they are, who were involved in actually getting the food on your table and what you drink. And so there's not knowing who they are doesn't mean that you don't have some consideration and gratefulness to the result of, you know, having food and drink on the table. So that was about equanimity. And then we move to loving kindness. And loving kindness is around wishing for happiness. And happiness in terms of defined as a sense of long-term well-being, peace of mind and satisfaction with our lives. So it's not the, oh, I love chocolate cake, or I love a beautiful sunset, or I love luxury hotels, or I love my partner, I love my, you know, dog, best friend, etc. They're all circumstances, unfortunately, over which we don't have control. But we do have control over genuine sources of happiness, and that's what loving kindness is talking about. And this is really important to know that, and to really understand and take on board that happiness is a way of interpreting the world. Since it may be difficult to change the world, and it's very difficult to change the world in these uncertain times, as you know, it is always possible to change the way we look at the world. And hence, you know, you could say, well, what are the glasses that we're looking through for, you know, at the world and our life? So that was last week on loving kindness. And then this week is compassion. And this is, so may all beings be free of suffering and its causes. So it's the question again of what is the suffering that compassion wants all beings to be freed of? And I'm wondering if anyone wants to suggest, you know, what might be suffering, but is there what is a source or a cause of suffering in your life, whether Susan or Stephen, you want to unmute and give an idea? So Chad in the Gompa has said health issues, fear of abandonment. So one thing with Buddhism, if you explore it a bit more, Buddhism is very into having lists, you know. It's wonderful. You can Google and find lists in Buddhism. And in terms of how Buddhism approaches suffering, there's, you know, there's eight types of suffering, there's six types of suffering, but they all come down basically into these three types of suffering here. So we're going to look at the suffering of suffering, the suffering of change, and all-pervasive suffering. So with the suffering, that's with, you know, arise from experience of injury, sickness, physical pain. That's one that we probably, you know, quickly identify as suffering, and how we experience emotional anguish is also under the suffering of suffering, and, you know, conditions in our life, and, you know, just sort of what we have there. And you can look at the news and realize that the sort of, you see pictures of the suffering of suffering in terms of people's conditions of life. But then it's very interesting, and in the resource handbook that is available, one of the references I've given is Viktor Frankl. I don't know if you've ever heard of the book called The Search for Meaning. And Viktor Frankl was a Jewish psychotherapist who was in a concentration camp during World War II. And so what he did in terms of the search for meaning in the concentration camp was to observe, you know, the dynamics and how people, you know, operated or what they did in the camp. And that his conclusion was that people who had some, who could get to some level of meaning or purpose or something in their life that, you know, the striving and keep the, you know, for the family or some meaning, which is all, of course, obviously in the mind, were the ones who were able to survive the camp and the terrible conditions in the camp, like he did, because what he was doing was observing and, you know, in his mind, kind of probably writing the book, The Search for Meaning, based on his observations of others and, you know, how he could support others. It's also interesting that in the conditions of camps the Australians were in versus under the Japanese, that versus the English, and that the Australian mateship, that kind of value and mental factor of mateship, was also extremely important in the survival of people in those terrible conditions of life. So that's the suffering of suffering, which can be directed with compassion and influenced by meditation. There's research that shows that meditation to overcome pain is as effective as medication, you know, like drugs. So it's the results have been, you know, extremely good in there. And Robert Kabat-Zinn, I think, was the name of the person who did quite a lot of work with cancer patients and meditation and just the really positive impact that that had. And the importance of, in some of those cases, was showing compassion to yourself. Remember we talked about being a friend to yourself? And that's a really important part of what the impact of meditation with the suffering of suffering type experiences are in terms of positive outcome. With the suffering of change, this is the mental suffering we undergo with our tendency to hold on to pleasurable encounters. And that was something we looked at last week with loving kindness and the you know, having, you know, happiness and the causes of happiness, that we hold on to happy experiences and then we get very upset that they change. You know, the love of our life leaves, the sort of, you know, there's death, sickness, aging are classics of, you know, birth is a huge change. So if you look at birth, sickness, aging and death are huge changes that, you know, do cause us suffering because we haven't prepared our mind for, you know, what some of those are. We don't have acceptance in our mind. Our experiences change and they become unsatisfying. And it is said that in the Buddhist view that the suffering of change is the main cause of suffering for human beings because we just want things to be permanent, stay the same. You think in your own mind, you know, people that have difficulty accepting the changes through their aging, the changes through, you know, their health changes, that's for themselves and others around them. So you get that the suffering of change is going to be a significant one. And then the third one is the all-pervasive suffering and dissatisfaction, where it is the continuing influence of disturbing mental states, so that it's sort of like they call affliction and the karma, you know, our karma playing out is what, you know, Buddhists, you know, say. But it's where, you know, we have, you know, sort of our body and mind, our actions and effects are all under the influence of, you know, disturbing mental states. And This is one we really have to work with awareness of mind and mental factors because of, all-pervasing suffering and dissatisfaction. I mean, just things like, the inner critic, how hard we are on ourselves, the judgment that we constantly, put on ourselves. Oh, if only you didn't do that. Oh, no, you said that again. You did that again. Does that sound familiar in your life? Repeated, shall we say, repeated patterns that don't serve us well. So that's kind of what we're talking about here in all-pervasive suffering and dissatisfaction, that we have habits of how we do things and how we sort of work with situations that are not helpful, that are harmful, in fact. Resonate for Susan and Stephen? Yes. And so this is where compassion comes into play. And as the Dalai Lama has defined it, it's a state of mind that is non-violent, non-harming, non-aggressive. And that's why I particularly mentioned about the inner critic voice that we all have and the importance of being friends to ourselves, because it's not other people that are probably harshest to us, that it's sometimes our own inner voice that is not very nice to us, that is aggressive and harming. And so the idea of compassion being and being a friend to yourself to reduce just what you say to yourself in a less harmful or an aggressive way. And it's a mental attitude based on the wish for us all to be free of suffering, and is associated with a sense of commitment, responsibility, and respect towards the other. But it's also important to say, and to keep the idea of being a friend to ourselves, which is one of the definitions of meditation that we saw, that we have a sense of commitment, responsibility, and respect to ourselves, of how we what we say to ourselves, what we do, and what we say to others, and how we, in our mind, are kinder and have more responsibility and respect for ourselves. And this is one of the very, very interesting results of the link between a Buddhist science, Buddhist mind and view, and the neuroscience. Now, you probably, with that diagram there, have you seen before, diagrams where they've mapped the brain and, they've got sort of things that are different colors of what's happening in the brain? And this is a really important study that talked about and discovered that there's a difference between empathy and compassion. So if you think about empathy, empathy is the, oh, I get it. So I really empathize with your what's going on for you, really empathize with your suffering. Now, if you start to keep on empathizing and empathizing, where does that get you? Yeah, well, one way is, in fact, unempathetic and just saying this is too hard and just shutting off. And the other one is you just become so empathetic that you're on the slippery slide too, and you would just sort of have get distraught and despair and turn away. And that's the thing, whether you turn away because it's too painful or turn away because you just sort of can't take empathizing anymore, that's what happens. And the neuroscience studies showed that on participants, volunteers, and on meditators, that empathy alone results in areas of the brain that are painful, around painful and stress and unpleasant experiences, are what get highlighted, and that's where the things go. And so what those red and blue are showing, that results of if you only look at the empathy and don't bring compassion in, then this is what happened. And the interesting thing about how this was literally discovered, and it was discovered in 2007 when Mattar Rickard, who is, if you look at the reference here, he's one of the people who is both a first-hand participant as well as a co-author, that he was doing meditation on empathy, as he was directed to do. And he said, during a pause after a first series of periods of meditation on empathy, the key researcher said to him, "What are you doing? It doesn't look at all like what we usually observe people when they're thinking about empathy for someone else's suffering." And he explained, Mattar Rickard said, "Oh, I've stopped doing it on empathy. It was just too overwhelming. And now I'm meditating on unconditional compassion, trying to feel a powerful feeling of love and kindness for people who are suffering. And for all sentient beings." And so that was just a happenstance. That was someone who was an experienced meditator, felt the impact of meditating on empathy, that got into the negative states of the mind, which they mapped, and then to recover for himself, meditated on compassion. And the compassion really heals. And so what that told them is, you don't want to lose, in empathy, but you need to have compassion strongly as the approach with which you do it. And the fact that people were just really interested that in the whole process of this investigation, you were using the first person experience, that of the meditator, with the third person experience of the researcher. So that was quite a aha moment in the whole area of neuroscience meets the Buddhist view and Buddhist mental states. So this was a really influential, if I got it, influential paper that came out and set of findings. And you can see there is a difference in the brain scans there, with more blue and more red. And so that's how they identify the difference. And so neuroscience really does show how compassion heals, because compassion reinforces an inner balance and a strength of mind and courageous determination to help those who suffer. And importantly, it's a determination that must be extended to ourselves too. That's a really important part of it. And it just what those brain scans showed, that it involved increased brain activation in networks associated with positive affect, affiliation, and reward, but not ignoring the presence of suffering, or changing the fact that there was a negative reality, that like if you watch the news. And so it's sort of like saying, and what I've said in past years, so the exercise of watching the news, if that's what you do, or if you look at feeds on social media, which will have some news, that there's people you see suffering in various ways, and obviously in difficult situations, that you don't turn away, that if it's just an empathetic response, then you can tend to turn away, and that's not going to really help anything, and including yourself, because you then have the tendency to turn away from your own suffering and situation. And so you don't turn away, but you go towards with the attitude of compassion. And you can do that with the backing of neuroscience, which says that it will light up those areas of your brain which are, have positive effect. So I think this is one of the most important findings in terms of what neuroscience can tell us about meditating on the four immeasurable attitudes and developing them, being familiar with them as a way of being in the world is the direct how to direct your mind. It really is extremely important. And so to get into sort of familiarity, which is what one of the definitions of meditation is, we'll do the analytical meditation on compassion. And just to, say that in doing the meditation, it will be looking at what three, excuse me, what three, the three forms of suffering that we looked at. So be kind to yourself, and as sort of new to this form of meditation, don't use a heavy, perhaps not use a heavy example of meditation, of suffering. But who knows what will come to your mind? And it's just a few examples, not too many we're going to be looking at. And being a friend to yourself means that we start these meditations by really looking at ourselves and our own situation. And that's part of not turning away from our situation and how we suffer, and developing the compassionate attitude to show ourselves kindness, compassion, respect, in what ways we may suffer and have dissatisfaction. Now, before we start that, is there any comments or questions? And if you're thinking, when while you're thinking, just sort of in preparation for, sitting and staying still, just move around, please get up. You at home, feel free to get up or do anything. Stretch out, have a drink. Really, there's a good bit of yoga being done here with the sort of, side bends. I like it. And please, this isn't a endurance test doing this meditation. And so if you need to move around or, do that. But as best you can to try and settle your mind and have the awareness on the meditation of your mind. So it's sitting comfortably and with that straight back, so you get the energy channel through the back working for you. And with the eyes slightly closed or half open, breathing in and softening, then breathing out and releasing any tightness or tension. Breathing in to soften, breathing out to release any tension or tightness. So we can settle and prepare the mind for the mind to be aware and present in this meditation. And we set a motivation to consider the suffering and dissatisfaction that is in our life and in the life around us in uncertain times. To do this with a compassionate attitude, to open up our heart and mind with kindness and non-harm. And then open up the situation of other people and connect with them with kindness and a compassionate attitude. And compassion is the wish for ourselves and all beings to be free of suffering and its causes. Compassion is a way to work with all the events we bear witness to in our own lives and in the world around us in these uncertain times. And directing our mind with compassion to not turn away from suffering or dissatisfaction is what we need to do for ourselves and others. To direct our mind with compassion, to soften and open up ourselves to take more wise action. Breathing gently, hold this understanding of compassion and bring your breath and your compassion into the area around your heart. And get in touch with your own wish as you say the words to yourself. May I be free of suffering and its causes. May I hold myself with compassion. May I be free of suffering and its causes. May I hold myself with compassion. So with a little bit of courage now, I'm going to ask you to look at your own suffering and dissatisfaction. Just a few examples to bring to mind under the three types of suffering that we considered. And it's whatever arises in your mind. So with the suffering of suffering, pain in the body, an emotional problem, resource issues. Let an experience arise. See if you can identify or feel what was happening in your mind. Whether it was harmful or helpful. And reflecting on this experience with kindness, say to yourself, may I be free of suffering and its causes. May I hold myself with compassion. Then with the suffering of change, it is about when you hold on to a person or a place or event, cling to it, and then it changes. Whatever comes to mind of your experience of the suffering of change. What might be going on with your thinking, your mental state of dealing with the suffering of change? Whether it was helpful or made things worse for yourself. Reflect on this suffering of suffering, and with kindness and courage, say to yourself, may I be free of suffering and its causes. May I hold myself with compassion. The third type of suffering is all pervasive suffering and dissatisfaction. Having our body and mind under the continuing influence of disturbing mental states, actions, under our karma. Reflecting on this suffering, pervasive suffering and dissatisfaction, see what arises for you. A harmful habit, particular disturbances in your mind, the voice of your internal critic always judging you. Reflect on how this turns your mind with suffering and dissatisfaction. And say to yourself with kindness, courage, and respect, may I be free of suffering and its causes. May I hold myself with compassion. Consider these three examples. Since you have little or no control over conditions in the external environment, did you identify mental factors, ways of reacting that do not serve you well, that are harmful? The suffering of suffering, the suffering of change, and all pervasive suffering and dissatisfaction have causes that arise within your own mind, causes that direct your mind with afflictions rather than with positive mental states. And with the power of a compassionate attitude, consider how you could open up and soften and take more wise action in the face of suffering and dissatisfaction. That with kindness and courage and respect from compassion, you can change the causes within your own mind. Because these causes are impermanent. They change. They can be transformed by positive mental factors such as compassion. And consider, in the very process of you putting a light on some of these in this meditation, they may well have changed. Some of the afflictive states of mind could change with familiarizing your mind with warmth, energy, and light of compassion, with your attitude of compassion. And so, with that idea in your mind that you can transform mental afflictions into beneficial and non-harming states of mind, with your compassionate attitude to yourself, say, may I be free from suffering and its causes. May I hold myself with compassion? May I open with kindness, courage, and respect. May I be free from suffering and its causes. May I hold myself with compassion. May I open with kindness, courage, and respect. Rest your mind in this compassionate attitude for a few breaths. Let this attitude stabilize. Arise the intention to grow your compassionate attitude. And just as you did not turn away from your own suffering and dissatisfaction, but turn towards it with compassion. So now you can turn towards suffering and dissatisfaction of other people. So the first person, bring to mind someone that you feel a closeness with. You may have some knowledge of their dissatisfaction or difficulties. See them there, turn towards them now, and offer your compassionate attitude, sending them warmth, energy, and light as you say, "May you be free from suffering and its causes. May you hold yourself with compassion. May you open with kindness, courage, and respect." May you be free from suffering and its causes. May you hold yourself with compassion. May you open with kindness, courage, and respect. And as you send this compassionate attitude to the person you feel close to, see and feel they are opening up with compassion and can reflect that back to you. And this strengthens your compassionate attitude in return. It establishes a connection point with them, a connection point between the two of you. With your compassion growing stronger, now bring to mind a person that you don't know really well, or someone you're neutral about. Picture this person, contemplate that they will be experiencing suffering and dissatisfaction just like you and the person you're close to, that they don't want to suffer. So turn towards them and offer your compassionate attitude, sending warmth, energy, and light as you wish for them. May you be free from suffering and its causes. May you hold yourself with compassion. May you open with kindness, courage, and respect. Send them this compassionate attitude of wishing them free from suffering and its causes, to wish them to hold themselves with compassion. And again, as they open up with your compassionate attitude, it reflects back to you and strengthens your own compassionate attitude and connection. So now have the courage to bring to mind a person who you have some aversion for in your feelings, a more difficult person. Picture them in your mind and remember they are just like you and the other two people in wanting to be free of suffering. This person has a mind that appears to you clouded by mental afflictions and harmful actions. Consider this is suffering that comes from causes that they may not show to you. So you find the courage and respect in yourself to turn towards them and offer them your compassionate attitude. And wish them, may you be free from suffering and its causes. May you hold yourself with compassion. May you open with kindness, courage, and respect. And this person too may well reflect back to you and opening up with your compassionate attitude, which reinforces and reflects your own compassionate attitude, so that you can open up more and more. So you can send light and warmth and energy from your compassionate heart to more and more people. So reflect and just see who arises in the space of your mind. Could be someone you know, someone you respect and don't know, organizations doing good work, groups of people, whoever comes across the space of your mind, you wish and say to them, may you all be free from suffering and its causes. May you all hold yourself with compassion and connection. May you all open up to yourself and others with kindness, courage, and respect. And whoever is coming across the space of your mind, may you all be free from suffering and its causes. May you all hold yourself with compassion and connection. May you all open up for yourselves and others with kindness, courage, and respect. Then the light and warm energy return to your own heart and rest in the inner clarity of your own mind that has opened up and connected with your attitude of compassion, connected to yourself and others with kindness, courage, and respect. And in your own time, bring yourself back to the room and dedicate the positive energy and merit you have created with generating the attitude of compassion for yourself and others. That you feel strengthened with the compassionate attitude and kindness, courage, and respect. To do a few breaths that the analytical meditations are not always easy. Can bring up quite a few reactions for you. And the important thing to know and to remind yourselves again is, the science-backed benefits of compassion and the fact that generating compassion and directing your mind with it can make a difference. Can you imagine that that would be the case? And for yourself, first of all, wouldn't it? And I like this quote from the Dalai Lama: if you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. And as it says in those dot points there, all the benefits and an antidote to negative states arising from our own or others' suffering. The idea of an antidote is a very important one in Buddhism, and it's the idea of that compassion can be an antidote to, really negative, like anger and aggression and hatred and a lot of harmful behavior. And applying compassion, if depending on how strong the hatred or anger might be, it might be a bridge too far to go from hatred to compassion, that there's steps in between other antidotes tolerance or patience, acceptance, and then through to compassion. Might be an easier way, is an easier way. Is it making some logic and reasoning? Can you see? So I'm trying to present the kind of the logic and reasoning behind why you will sort of really practice compassion and why. As the next one says, I myself will practice compassion with the five forces. And the five forces we've looked at as the five ways of really supporting us in developing our attitudes for the Four Immeasurable Attitudes. And so here it's to say, well, the intention to direct my mind with compassion and how am I going to do that? The important thing of arising the wish, yes, I do want to direct my mind with compassion. I don't want to look away from my own suffering and trying to problem solve, do something about it, or I don't want to look away from others' suffering. That familiarity with the power of compassion and how to use it is really important. And I guess to be perfectly honest, doing this class and then not thinking about compassion for the rest of the week is probably, not going to change anything much, or isn't going to build your familiarity with the attitude. So it's about maybe thinking, what compassionate actions could I adopt, or in what I do and say? So is there some situation that might be coming up this week where I know it's one that, gets to me a bit. What could I do or say that would demonstrate a more compassionate response or a compassionate action? Be realistic about what you could do, and that's a way to actually be developing familiarity by what you do and what you say. And then with the meditations, hopefully there you got some ideas of what harmful actions to let go of. First of all, what harmful mental states to let go of, and then what harmful actions that of things you do and say out of habit. And we're not talking, we're talking just a few things here, not a huge number of things. Just to try and build that familiarity and build the intention. And the aspiration are really important, to rejoice in your efforts and aspire to continue. That to try and identify for yourself a win or something like that, and saying, yes, I'm going to do more of that. And or just from, if you're inner critic, if you have an active inner critic, to try and reduce the level of activity of that inner critic, or reduce the harshness of that inner critic. Because don't we often say that we're harder to ourselves than anyone else? And so, Stephen and Susan, you might agree with that, that we're often very hard to ourselves, which is why I keep saying about making friends with ourselves and practicing with ourselves the compassionate and kind attitude, because that's where we get an understanding of other people's experience, and that's why it can help us really develop the wish for others to be free of suffering. Because, gosh, I don't like the way I'm suffering, and I want others to be free of it. And gosh, I'm developing a real peace of mind and calmness, and wouldn't it be terrific if, many more people had that, from people that you're fond of and close to people that you don't like, because, there's things going on in their mind which must be causing them suffering because of what they do and say that cause you to, find them difficult. We've had.
Caroline, I'd like to ask a question.
Yes, Stephen.
So I think you've partly answered this already, but I myself do feel some compassion burnout sometimes, because although I feel I'm expressing compassion and thinking in a compassionate way towards a person or a problem, nothing actually results from it. Do you think compassion should have a focus on solutions, so that it's becomes more active rather than just thinking in a compassionate way?
Well, that's a good question, Stephen. I think that people do say, oh, look, you're wishing people to be free of their suffering, but, how on earth can you, make anything happen in what you do? And it, so the why I keep saying about not turning away, that's probably what I personally say most to people about not turning away from the suffering. To actually, friends say, oh no, I don't watch the news anymore. And I say to them, so you've turned away from other people's, experiences and suffering, when it's, that's not, if everyone does that, it just allows, it doesn't spread a compassionate attitude. And there is a calm, by practicing compassionate attitude for ourselves is really important. And then spreading, wishing others to have be free of suffering too, there's I know there's a kind of a calmness. Like I know for myself, people will comment on, give me feedback about, oh, you're so calm and, you're da-di-da, that so you can provide an example for others. And ultimately, all we can change is what's in our own mind. But it's also, like I said, provide an example for others. And if we can take actual actions, I always remember, I don't know if you look at the program here, but Corey Jackson comes here quite often and does, kind of mindfulness, and really, he's really into the science too. And
Yes, I've heard him speak a number of times.
yes, and I remember some years ago now, when he was living in Sydney, he used to do workshops with people like, and don't hold me on this, but people like Greenpeace, and would do with activist groups the idea of, when you go out and do activism work, make sure the motivation that you're holding is a very compassionate and kind one, to benefit not only animals, but to benefit, the people who are killing the whales, so, and creating negative karma for their future lives, that to try and stop people doing negative actions, as well as being very clear about the motivation, is not a vengeful one. The motivation is a very positive, compassionate, kind one. So that's really important. And the Dalai Lama says you don't have idiot compassion. He talks about, if you can stop somebody creating negative karma through a compassionate or kind action, then you should do that. So again, holding the strong motivation that it's compassion and kindness of when you take, what might look a bit of a hard action to someone else, that you see will benefit them. So it sort of works in a variety of ways. Does that make sense a bit, Stephen?
Yes. I can see that what you're saying is to maintain an attitude of compassion through meditation, through listening to talks like this one, and not expect a response, not expect that the compassion that I feel and project is necessarily going to solve problems or change things drastically. Maybe it all happens by just maintaining that attitude, and maybe over time, especially if it's people in in your own family, people that you're interacting with, yeah, that's when it's going to make a difference. But
Absolutely.
I'm one of those people who doesn't watch the news because I sort of feel that no matter how much empathy or compassion I have, it's there are things that are just beyond my control, so I'd rather focus on the realistic expectations with added with relationships that I'm a part of.
Yes, that maybe, from having this week's discussion and presentation, you might, review that, because it's still other people's experiences that, there's still knowledge there. There's still, you don't know. It's sort of like, you don't know the kind of the energy waves that, go through, like, we don't know. So just even sending some compassion to people you see on the news, but also when you look at the news, you see unimaginable compassion. The people who worked in Gaza in the hospitals there, the people who are with the Red Crescent organization, or Doctors Without Borders, the And it's, as we'll do next week, it's about looking at the situation, not turning away, looking with compassion and rejoicing in the amazing work that people do. And that's what we also need to pay attention to.
Yes, and that's very inspiring. So
Yes,
from that point of view, yeah, I agree with you completely. That
yes.
I guess I'm just referring to the endless descriptions of horrific details of what people are doing to each other. That does become
Yes.
very depressing. But you're right, people who are out there in engaging and helping. Yeah, that's a
Yes.
very inspiring thing.
That is. And that's about what the attitude of joy says, that you need to keep that balance.
Yeah.
And that's really important between the four attitudes to keep a balance with them all. So
Yeah.
we'll talk more about joy and paying attention to the goodness in the world
Yeah.
week. And then the week after, the fourth one is how they all particularly work together.
I see. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Stephen. Okay. Well, we might dedicate with a picture that this is one that Miffy found for me. And like, have you like, look at that. I mean, talk about compassion. So we dedicate the with saying the four immeasurable attitudes. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be parted from the happiness that is without suffering. May all beings abide in equanimity, free from bias, attachment, and anger that holds some close and others distant. And we dedicate that and rejoicing in our own efforts for doing this class today, and dedicate that we will go out in our next week and try to find opportunities to show kindness, compassion, and joy in the goodness of ourselves and others. Thank you all.
In 2022, yours was the first, your series on this particular topic was got what got me really involved in studying Buddhism. And I'm so grateful to you for that presentation. I've been looking forward to listening to it again.
I'd
Yes.
like to second that emotion that Susan expressed.